You feeling any better? You sound pretty raspy.
Oh yeah, I sound awful. I could barely talk yesterday at all.
You got some water or something?
I got a Wendy's Frosty.
Same thing. Are you ready? Are you ready to start?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm ready.
Do you want me to explain how we ended up where we ended up here for what we're going to do here?
Yeah, go ahead. I'll be interested in hearing your interpretation.
I'm sure you'll completely agree with it.
Yeah, go ahead.
We never disagree on these things. So I think it's safe to say that you're a big fan of lists.
Yeah.
Just generally speaking. And generally speaking, I am not. And so we haven't really done a lot. Like you've cornered me into a couple, I think, on the show. I can't really think of any off the top of my head, but
yeah, just like when we do a movie episode, so we rank other ones in the franchise. Yeah.
And so we've been off for we had last week off, which was our very first week off, by the way.
Yeah.
Since we started last summer. Although technically we had a week with two, so if you really want to say we've had one a week, you kind of can still.
Yeah. Yeah. On average.
Because I know people at home really care.
well, there's a couple people that I know are going to text me in a few days and be like, where's our episode? But yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, Dan's mom and my mom.
No.
No. So we had some weeks off and I've been really struggling with some technical difficulties related to the feed that have been completely draining me of all energy related to podcasting stuff. I think I've kept you mostly out of that.
Yeah. I just know what's going on and I don't really get it, but
yeah.
I'm not meant to. So
honestly, you know who you have to thank for that?
Who?
Our friends Danny Wright from the Station 13 podcast and Tom from the Two Big Geeks podcast.
Oh, okay.
They have basically been listening to me complain and help me try to debug issues with this over the last couple weeks. So because of them, I haven't been annoyingly texting you constantly. So thank you to you too. I just want to formally get that out there.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't have annoyingly been texting me either because I can't help you with these problems and you know that.
Yeah, but I had to talk to somebody because honestly, most of the problems have been like things that are unrelated to anything on my end. Like right now, for example, anybody who has the Overcast app isn't getting any new episodes.
Ah.
And I don't know what to do about it. And it's an app that I love and I love the developer, but it's a one-man shop. And so he doesn't, you know, do support, especially for tiny shows like us. So like I literally have no idea how to fix it. It's been a big series of annoying, seemingly unrelated, but probably slightly related issues that I still haven't completely figured out, but I guess that's just the way it's going to be.
Fingers crossed, yeah.
Yeah.
So, all of that to say, I pushed you on doing lists and broke you down.
Yeah, it's the new year. Everybody does listicles for a year, best of the year, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And you were like, oh, why don't we just do that? Because we were talking about it the other day while we were on our way to go see a movie, I think. And I was like, I haven't... Normally, I think about the podcast and I have like ideas for what I want to talk about. And it's been such a long break and I've been dealing with all these issues. I hadn't had any ideas. And so you pushed me on that. I said no, basically, right?
Yeah.
And then a couple days later, I still couldn't come up with anything. And finally, I was like, you know what? Let's just do the listicle. But
yeah,
let's do the ultimate listicle of listicles and just do lists all the way down.
Yeah, and I will say this. We never agreed whether I told you there were four specific categories that I couldn't get it down to three because we agreed all of these should only have three so we can get through as many as possible. And so four of them, I said five, which we said we'll tackle that when we get there. So we're here and we'll see what you allow me to do.
So here's kind of the plan we came up with, or at least I'll tell you the plan that we're going to do. And then you can disagree with me if you think so.
Yeah.
So we kind of came up with a giant list of listicles that we could do. And then we both took that list and we picked each of our top 10 listicles from the list of listicles.
Yeah.
And then we're going to trade off going down each of our top 10 listicles. And then for each one of those topics, we're going to give our top three for that. Now, like you said, you lobbied to get more than three. But I think if we're going to get through all 20 of our lists here, I don't think we're going to be able to do more than three. But maybe you can like quickly
on do my honorable mentions.
We'll see. I'm going to try and push you for three. You can fight back. We'll see how that goes. And then when we've gone through all of our lists, which maybe we won't actually last all the way through here, then we're going to rank through the list that we talked about and rank our top three each of the lists that we talked about.
Oh, okay. you'll have to remind me of that when we get there.
That wasn't clear.
No,
oh,
it wasn't.
Man, okay.
All right. So, who wants to go first then?
Why don't you go first?
All right, I'll start out with just a kind of straightforward one. So this list will be top movies of 2017.
And this is movies that came out on 2017 or just any movies?
This is any movies that I personally have seen in 2017.
Yeah, that's fine.
So, yeah.
All mine happened to be 2017. Anyway, you start first. And let's go top down for it. Or do you want to go bottom up? I don't care.
You mean third to first?
Yeah.
Okay. So my third would be movie called The Room. And I don't know if it's The Room or Room. This was one of the ones that I cheated on because I'm pretty sure it was a 2016 movie.
Yeah, I think because it was an Oscar contender or something.
Yeah, it's not that terrible movie that Disaster Artist was based off of. It's the one that's based off of the horrifying book. And it's actually, I loved it. Like, it was one of those that was like sort of Oscar bait, I think, for 2016. And I think she ended up, who is it, Brie Larson, the new Captain Marvel. She ended up winning like Academy Award or something like that for that performance. And it was great. Like, it had me, like, I wasn't really expecting anything of it, and I just watched it on a whim one night, and like, I was just completely engrossed, like, from beginning to end.
Yeah, so, I
like,
heard it was amazing. It involves kidnapping and children, and so I've realized since having children that almost takes a movie off the table for me.
Yeah, it's,
so I haven't gotten around to it and probably won't.
Much like my voice, it's a rough trip. So,
all right, so my number three is Coco, the Pixar movie. Did you see that one yet?
Nope.
It was absolutely fantastic. Highly recommended. All right, what was your number two?
My number two is War for the Planet of the Apes.
That was in my runner-ups, but didn't make
it. Yeah, it was just the cap to the trilogy that was just fantastic. So.
Yeah, and if you want to hear more, you can go back to I think that was episode 5, but we recorded a whole episode on it that you could listen to.
Yep.
My number two was Baby Driver.
Okay.
Which we also did an episode on.
Yep.
And I just really liked. I really like Edgar Wright, and that movie was just screaming Edgar Wright awesomeness.
If we did a top 10, that would have been there. But
yeah. All right, what's your number? What did you already say?
My number one is pretty predictable, and I just think because of the conversation that it's caused and everything about it, and all the controversy,
downsizing,
I will pick The Last Jedi.
Oh, okay. Yes, that is mine as well. Star Wars: The Last Jedi. I'm not going to argue that that's the best film that I saw this year, but it's the one I enjoyed the most and the one I will probably watch the most.
Exactly. That's basically what I picked these, because I also wouldn't say The Room is the best movie I've seen all year, but it's definitely like it's the one that emotionally impacted me the most when I watched it. So all of these things on these lists, by the way, for me, a lot of them are based off of a criteria of how did it affect me personally.
Yeah.
Like, also, if we also did a top 10, Justice League would have been on my list, but it definitely is not worthy of a top 10 list objectively, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. So, and real quick, my honorable mentions.
Were
It, Get Out, and A Monster Calls.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, I really need to see Get Out. It's high on my list.
And you need to see A Monster Calls, I promise you.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, so we'll jump over to my top one. Does that sound good?
Yeah, which is?
My top one is your favorite Twitter follows.
Okay.
Which I shouldn't have said Twitter. I really mean social media follows, but for me, it's all Twitter, so.
Okay. About two of these have actually been this year, and one of them I've just been following for a long time. So I'll
start, this is just overall.
Yeah, so I'll start with number three, and it's not anything this isn't anything spectacular. This one actually hard for me to come up with a list for, just FYI.
Oh, man, I have a giant list, but yeah, go ahead.
My third is just Jake Tapper, the CNN guy, just because, like, I didn't really know who he was. I'm not saying he's some incredible person or anything, but he's good at, like, getting out the news. I've seen him make a mistake and apologize to people online several times, and I appreciate the way he handles stuff, even for being more in the pundit-y evening side of stuff. He seems right. to be pretty legit.
Yeah, he's one that I'm aware of through Twitter and have basically no awareness of on TV. Like, he could be one of those crazy screaming pundits.
Yeah, he's not.
I would have no idea, but he seems very reasonable on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
So my number three is actually a political person, too. I don't know if you know who this is, but have you ever heard of Gabe Fleischer? I think that's how you pronounce it.
No clue.
Okay. Gabe Fleischer is I think at this stage he's 15 years old.
Wow.
And he runs a political newsletter. I think it's actually an email newsletter called Wake Up to Politics.
Uh-huh.
That has become, like, absurdly popular. Like, a whole bunch of big journalists, like, subscribe to it and reference it all the time. And apparently it's really popular in D.C. Like, he does these really good weekday morning, like, roundups of what's happening in politics. And they're really, really well, like, they're well-rounded. Like, they're not coming at it from a pundit angle. Obviously, like, I honestly don't know where his, like, political allegiance lies, which is pretty rare, especially on Twitter, because that's where I follow him.
Yeah.
But also, he's from St. Louis.
Oh, okay.
He lives in University City in St. Louis City, nice. I believe. So
it's right by me.
Well, exactly.
Right,
yeah.
I mean, but close.
Yeah, I forgot what his school is he goes to. I'll put a link in the show notes to his newsletter. And New York Times did, like, a piece on him at the beginning of the year, which is when I ran into him. And that obviously exploded his popularity even bigger. And so he's really fun to watch because, like, he's really actually pretty good at giving outlines of what's going on. But also, like, he finds patterns where I don't see other journalists do that really, really quick on Twitter. Yeah. So anyway, he's a good follow. Definitely recommend him if you're looking for just interesting, non-hyperbole political commentary.
Yeah. Okay. My number two, because is that where we're at now?
Yep.
Or, yeah,
number
okay.
two.
Yeah, my number two is, and you know her, it's just Rachel Held Evans. She's kind of in the weird, like, alternative religious community. And I followed her years ago whenever I had read one of her books. And she's someone I definitely do not agree with everything on. And I think she's a little far for me on some issues, but I always can, like, handle her. Like, she's one of those people that, like, even if, because I know she comes across very authentic, like, I can, even if there's something I disagree with, it never, like, makes me mad or anything.
Right.
I never think, like, this stupid person. Like, I always think, okay, I can see where you're coming from, but I just don't agree. And so, like, I just like following her because typically when there's a lot of issues that come up and that touch on religious or political stuff, like, I generally like seeing what her frame of mind is, even if I disagree.
Yep. So. Definitely agree with that. I follow her as well. She's like a refreshing voice in, I guess she's in the, like, evangelical Christian community.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's exactly where she lands, but she actually thinks very logically through things, I feel like.
Yeah, and she's also one of those people that will blow up on someone on Twitter, and then if she realizes she made a mistake, will, you know, apologize. And that's something I appreciate so much.
Yes. Yeah, she can get ranty sometimes, and then she almost always backs off of it, explains where she's coming from. So, yeah, I definitely appreciate that angle
right.
from her, too. I would definitely thumbs up the Twitter follow, and from what I hear, would thumbs up reading one of her books, too.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I haven't actually read any, so. So my number two is a person who I think I've told you about probably numerous times, but this is Seth Worley. Do you recall who this is?
I remember the name. I don't know anything about it, though.
So he's a, like, indie director. I first, like, ran into him a long time ago when he did a tutorial for a piece of visual effects software that I use to show you how to make the smoke monster in Lost.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Maybe dates that a little bit. And he was, like, hilarious just in doing tutorials. And then later found out that he actually made movies for Lifeway, the company.
Oh, yeah.
In Nashville. But he's not at all associated with him anymore. He makes a lot of really great short videos and stuff. And he's that guy who, like, if I were to put money on the table, I would say he's going to make, like, a big blockbuster full-length feature movie at some point. And he's going to be a name that a lot of people know in the future. Because his style is amazing. And he's already, like, he seems like he's in the right circles. And he's like, done a commercial for J.J. Abrams before and stuff, so...
Nice.
He's also just hilarious.
I think I've seen that name. It may actually just be if you've retweeted stuff from him.
That's very possible. Yeah. He may have been my very first follow on Twitter, because he was somebody I followed before I was on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Who's your number one?
All right. My number one is actually a recent follow that came after the new Star Wars movie. I wasn't aware of their Reddit page, but apparently they now have a Twitter account as well. And I found it in searching for Star Wars accounts after I was on that Last Jedi high after the movie came out, and I found the prequel memes.
Oh, yes.
Twitter.
Yes, yes.
And, like, it's I like the emo Kylo Ren, the bad father Solo account, and all of those, but the prequel memes is by far my favorite.
Yeah.
Because
that subreddit is pretty impressive.
Which we keep threatening that we'll do a prequel episode at some point in the future, but
I hope you guys can handle a 12-hour podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I do like the prequels, and a lot of it, like, there's a lot of stuff in it that I think is sort of indefensible, and I understand why if people were, like, waiting 20 years for it, they're not a big fan.
Yeah.
But you know, to me, they had, like, a personal, like, I was 9 years old when the first one came out. And so, like, I know all these, like, lines and even some of the cheesy ones or the good ones. And they're just hilarious to me. So I love that account.
Because we grew up with those movies, we're aware of every single detail. And for, I guess, just because of how popular those movies were, there is a meme for basically every nuance of those movies. It's just mined for all of its potential glory.
Yeah, they're great. I mean, they really are.
All right. So my number one Twitter follow would be Todd Vasiri, which is probably not somebody you've heard me talk about, but you may have seen me retweet him.
What's he do?
He's a visual effects artist for ILM.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't. I mean, I know what ILM and all that is. But...
Yeah, I mean, he just does visual effects for Industrial Light and Magic. So basically, he's pretty funny too, and he's, like, well connected with a lot of podcasters and stuff, strangely. But the main thing is I just love the technical bits of film, and not only does he talk a lot about visual effects specifically, he's just really into the technical side of film at all. So he talks a lot about, you know, like, lensing, like, diopter effects, and, like, all sorts of different cinematography strategies and details and stuff like that. Other guy, which I have in an honorable mention, is Steve Yedlin.
Oh, I know that one too.
He's a guy who goes even deeper into the technical side. Like, he's a great follow too, but he's going to get very technical. But he's the guy who ended up being the cinematographer for The Last Jedi.
Yeah. Interesting.
The
Yedlin?
Yeah, Steve Yedlin. Yeah, he's, like, I know him just because Todd Vasiri used to retweet him all the time, and then I started following him.
Yeah.
And then I realized that he does all of Rian Johnson's movies, and I had liked a couple of those in the past. But he, like, my favorite thing Steve Yedlin has done is he has this really technical breakdown of the whole, like, film look thing.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, he's shown that he can model film.
Yeah.
On digitally shot footage, he can model all of the different characteristics of film to the point where no professionals have been able to, like, identify the difference.
Interesting. Okay.
And so it's sort of like disproving a lot of these, like, you know, film has a warmer, more natural look and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And he's done a similar thing with, like, resolution. Like, he's kind of a big push for, like, pushing back against 4K.
Oh, okay.
Because he likes a lot of these Alexa cameras that are 2K.
Yeah.
And they do a lot of stuff with that extra processing power that a lot of the 4K cameras are actually worse at, because they trade a lot just to get that extra resolution bump. Anyway, this is what happens when I start talking about it.
No, that's fine.
But anyway, yeah, they're awesome. So definitely recommend them.
My next list is TV shows of 2007. And again, my criteria here is TV shows that I watched.
Sure.
In 2017. Yeah.
Because we're millennials. We don't watch TV live. We wait until it's on Netflix and then we
actually
binge it.
My top three, it does look like they were all streaming during 2017. So
nice.
So my number three is going to be Better Call Saul. I have not seen the third season of that yet, but I was weary about watching it after, you know, Breaking Bad obviously being so great. I'm not sure why I had any loss of doubt in Vince Gilligan and doing a show and of characters of his own creation, but
it's because it's a spinoff, and spinoffs are generally speaking of lower quality.
Right. This is absolutely as good as Breaking Bad, at least the first two seasons.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
So Better Call Saul is my number three.
Nice. So as I started making this list, I realized that either we don't watch as much TV shows as I thought we did, or I just have a really bad memory.
This one's hard for me. I think we're different too, because I've expressed before, like, I love movies, but I'm probably more of a TV person.
Right.
Because I like the long, drawn-out form stuff. The movies that I end up liking, I notice, are ones that are either longer or can put a lot of emotional impact into a short amount of time, which is like why I think Star Wars hits me so much. And it's why I don't care for movies a lot in general over TV, because I don't feel like there's enough time to develop these emotional moments. So when one can do it, it's very impressive to me.
Right.
So all of that to say, that's sort of why I like TV, because you can have these long, like, 2-year setups to like an emotional payoff. And I really like that about television.
Yeah,
so,
that makes sense. Yeah. I think for me, it's generally the, like, a TV show just almost as a rule is a little bit more rushed. And so almost every aspect of it is going to be slightly lower quality on the technical side.
But now we're getting so much better with some of these shows.
No, right. But so are movies. You know what I mean? So
that's true.
The technical precision that you can make in a movie, where you can overanalyze, you know, frames and stuff like that. These aren't things that are important for something being good. It's just things I personally enjoy a lot. And so movies can just push those boundaries more than TV shows. And I like that I can watch something and then it be over. You know what I mean? I get the full completion.
Yeah. Yeah. And I get that too.
I don't want to say I don't have the time, because everybody likes to say they don't have time for things, but I use my time differently generally than watching a lot of TV.
Right. And I get that.
But anyway, all that to say, I did have three. Have you seen The Good Place?
No, I have not. I don't even know what that is.
So this is from the aforementioned Todd Vasiri. He tweeted about it a lot, which felt weird because he doesn't talk about primetime TV very often. And me and my wife were looking for something, and we just happened to see that it was on Hulu or something like that. We're like, I've heard that this show is really good, but nothing about it says that it should be. And we started watching it, and we both immediately got totally sucked in. It is, you know, a TV comedy. I later found out it's the same showrunners as The Office and Parks and Rec.
Oh, okay.
But it feels very different than those two. In fact, it feels very different than anything I've seen on TV.
Yeah.
It is a very unique comedy style primetime show from anything I've seen. So I would definitely recommend it if you see it on Netflix or something like that, just to give it a couple episodes and see what you think, because it's very fun.
Okay. And what is that again?
It's called The Good Place.
The Good Place. Okay.
It stars Kristen Bell.
Oh, okay.
Who's, you know, a big actress. Yeah. And then also Ted Danson, who is pretty great in it. And don't read anything about it. Just go into it blind.
Yeah, I added it, so I'm going to look at it. My number two is a very big one, and it's sort of my number two for the same reason that in the movies, Last Jedi is my number one. I'm not saying, like, this is the all-time greatest season of this show, because, I mean, it's generally favored, but I know people had some problems with what they called jetpacking this season, where things felt rushed because there's no books to go on. But Game of Thrones is just such a cultural phenomenon. And still, even with this being one of their, it's probably like an 8 out of 10 type season. Like, it's still just overwhelmingly in the zeitgeist. Everyone's talking about it. It's so well written. It's just a lot of fun to watch, and you're always on the edge of your seat watching it every Sunday. So Game of Thrones was on my list as number two because it's just still seems to be such a big deal. And it's not dropping the ball like some other shows that
you're not going to talk about. Don't do it.
Walking Dead. But
we almost made it an episode.
Almost.
I cut it out of most. So maybe I'll leave this one in.
Yeah. So that's my number two is Game of Thrones.
So mine, which actually after talking about The Good Place, I feel like that one should have been two. So my number three is really on this list because I remember watching it this year and that's pretty much it, which is season two of The Crown. Have you ever seen any of that show?
No, but it is on my list. I added it.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say it's like amazing. Everybody should go out and watch it, but it's a extremely well executed show about Queen Elizabeth.
You know, World War II historical drama, right?
Post-World War II, because, you know, she becomes queen.
Okay, yeah. And you need to be clear, because Queen Elizabeth I is
medieval.
Oh,
yeah, sorry. Queen Elizabeth II.
Okay. I don't know if that's the second or not.
Whatever.
Not
the one that's still alive.
Yeah. So my number one is, hands down, without a doubt, The Leftovers.
Oh, yes. I was sitting here trying to guess what yours would be. I forgot about that.
I did never heard of this show until this year. And there's another podcast network called Bald Move, and I highly recommend them. They got all kinds of stuff that's entertainment-based. And they kept talking about it as, like, they kept referring to it as the best show that, like, nobody was watching. And it seems like, and I looked into it, and like, it seems like across the board, like, critics love this show. And it's not like no one's watching it, because it got three seasons. It's just like, it, for what it is, it should have been much bigger.
And what network is this on?
It's HBO.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is also what's kind of crazy, is it's HBO, and I guess it makes sense. Everybody's watching John Oliver and Game of Thrones and all that other stuff. It's just kind of interesting that it could be such a critical hit and just like it just sort of coasting for 3 years. So it went three seasons. It ended like officially, like it's all done, wrapped up this year. And it was just like, well, one, I've kind of told you about this. It's Damon Lindelof who did Lost, and notoriously like people did like have different opinions about how the last couple seasons wrapped up.
Notoriously, people have different opinions.
Yeah.
It's a nice way of putting it.
So this seemed to be like, it seems like most people generally agree, like this was like his redemption, because it was just like so perfect all the way through. It's definitely worth watching. Stick through the first season. It's definitely great after episode five, but the second season and the third season are just like the most off the wall, incredible, like throw you for a loop type stuff. And it's just a very complex, intricate show. And it's Damon Lindelof, so like the characters are just awesome to watch because he seems to be very good with that above all else. So
yeah, I'm just waiting for it to show up on Netflix, which will never happen, I guess, because it's on HBO.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah.
Great and unexpected and perfect ending. So
nice.
It's just really good. But yeah, so that's my number one.
All right. Well, mine is going to be less impassionately defended here, but basically it's the one I could think of that I just thought was a really great season this year, which was Stranger Things 2, which we talked about.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I had to cut that. It was close up there. That's one of my honorable mentions, that and Black Mirror.
Yeah, Black Mirror, the two episodes that I've seen of this season were really great. But I haven't finished it, so I can't really say.
Well, up until this year, I don't know if you remember, but you kept asking me like, hey, have you finished Black Mirror? And you kept asking me that. And I had really only watched about three episodes. So this year was kind of the first time I actually sat and watched through it all and actually became a fan.
Yeah, Black Mirror is a show that you know you don't want to recommend to people because you don't want to be responsible for their experience while they view it.
Yeah.
But you want everybody around you to see it so you can talk to them about it.
Right.
Is that an accurate way to say that?
Yes, it definitely is.
It's a very, very dark.
Yeah, it's basically Twilight Zone for the technology age.
Yeah.
I think that's even a blurb that people have used for it before. That's not original to me, but that is a good.
Right. It's an anthology show, talks about technology. It's very dark, very depressing. But
much more adult.
Yes, yes, much more adult.
Than Twilight Zone.
But very, very thought-provoking too, which is the fun part of it. All right, so we've made it through three of our 20 so far, so
we
probably need to get clicking here.
The rest of these will go quicker.
I'm sure they will. All right, next one. Is it my turn? Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So cities that you'd like to visit.
All right. Okay. My number three is Milesburg, Pennsylvania. And that's just
Milesburg, Pennsylvania.
It's just more of a personal, cause that's where a lot of our family lives. And I really like that area. It's close to Penn State.
Okay.
It's about 20 minutes from Penn State.
Yeah. So. That makes sense.
It's just an old town.
Is it worth other people visiting?
There's some mountains around there, woods. Yeah, it's got like a nice little like city, not city as in big city, but like old fashioned town sprawled out over the hills area that they have. Like they keep a lot of their old buildings and restaurants and stuff.
Nice.
It's like a nice like hometown type deal that has a lot of things you can do that. They haven't torn it all down and just put up new stuff.
So. Cool. That's Milesburg, Pennsylvania. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And again, that's more of a personal pick. Yeah. I just had to pick a number
I should have specified. My thought going into it was cities that I would like to visit, like that I haven't already been to.
Oh.
But okay. Both make sense, obviously, because I just said cities to visit. Mm-hmm. So that's all on me. Anyway, mine's based on that. So let's go. Number three I have on mine is Tokyo.
Oh, yeah.
I would really like to visit there. I'd like to visit Japan, generally speaking, and then Tokyo itself.
Yeah.
A, feels like probably the most accessible for a person who doesn't know Japanese, but I don't really know that. But definitely it's just a crazy, unique city that would be really cool to experience.
Yeah, yeah. I was kind of thinking more United States, so let me quickly amend mine.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why I wasn't thinking internationally.
Well, because I didn't specify. That was my fault.
Yeah, yeah. So my number two then, I don't know if this is the right one in Germany, but I would say, I'll just say like one of the more common ones, like Munich or something like that.
Yeah.
One of those cities that has a lot of the like museums and stuff like that, because Germany.
Yeah, I have Berlin on my honorable mentions. That is definitely one of the European cities I would love to see.
Yeah, because they like I'm big into like ancient history, and they're one of those places that I believe has like a big history museum there as well that has a lot of cool stuff.
I would imagine so, especially with your interest in like Christian history. There's quite a bit that happened there.
Like a lot of our scholarship is based in German traditions. Like,
what do you mean by scholarship?
Like particularly in like Christian scholarship, like you were saying, was based in Germany. So like I used to read a lot of stuff back whenever I was in a somewhat like ancient history and biblical studies degree. And like you would always see a lot of these professors, at least ones that I was coming across their books, they would always speak like some combination of Hebrew, Greek, and German.
And Latin, I imagine.
Yeah, yeah, that too. And a lot of it with the German was surprising to me. And I realized it was mainly because they were constantly referencing like German scholarship.
Yep.
On the issue.
Yeah, so it's surprising, like, when you read about the history of the Bible, meaning the construction of the Bible and canonization and everything.
Right.
It's like the amount of German names involved in all of that is kind of incredible, because you don't really think of Christianity as being a German thing necessarily, or I don't.
There's even some things that have become cultural that are incorrect linguistically that have come from German. Like, I think Jehovah, like that word is like an incorrect
translation of Yahweh.
Yeah. And that was a German thing. Like that's a German reason why it exists. It might be that one. I just remember there's one of those that's the reason why. There was a lot of issues linguistically, but yeah.
Well, and isn't Gutenberg, isn't he German?
It sounds German. Sounds like it has an umlaut in it.
Am I getting that right? Gutenberg meaning the guy who invented the printing press?
Yeah, yeah. I know who you're talking about. I just don't know if he's German.
Oh,
it sounds right, though.
Oh, German. He was a German blacksmith, goldsmith, printer, and publisher. So, yeah, he was German. So I imagine that's probably pretty relevant, too, that all of the original printed versions of the Bible were coming from Germany.
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense.
And then obviously Luther and all that stuff.
Right, right. Okay, what's your...
All right, my number two is Singapore,
okay,
which is just a crazy, interesting city-state that from a, like, urban design, city planning perspective, I just find immensely interesting.
Yeah.
Because they're kind of able to do the things that a lot of cities would love to do, but can't because they have to construct their society with the surrounding suburbs and rural areas in mind. And
yeah.
because of the unique sort of setup of Singapore, they just get to do crazy stuff. It's just a really cool city with really cool architecture and cool ideas.
Okay.
That's my only real reason for that.
My last one would be for similar reasons as the previous, but it would probably be London in England.
Yep, that's mine too.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like I like reading a lot of medieval fiction and as well as ancient history, and they have sort of both. And the fact that you're like in London and you're like in this place where like all these crazy things have happened,
mm-hmm.
like just the royalty line and all that sort of stuff, and yeah. the War of the
Pick
Roses.
Pick a time in modern history and there's a bunch of relevant stuff in London for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it's just, it would be incredible to just kind of be in a lot of those places.
I have a gigantic list of reasons why I would love to go to London. There was a very brief period of time where we flirted with the idea of moving to London when an opportunity didn't even really come along, just sort of was potentially there. And me and my wife went very deep into London, like rent and figured out neighborhoods and all that. That is a city I would just absolutely, I would love to live there for a period of time if that was practical, which it probably never will be.
I'm not against going to Europe at some point in my future, but we'll see where things go.
Yeah. So, and we have lots of listeners from London, or the UK, which it seems like most of them are in the London kind of vicinity. So, you know,
I feel like all of my picks would all be for history related reasons.
Yeah.
I mean, because my other one that I was trying to wrestle with was like, you know, like Israel or somewhere in the Middle East or Egypt.
So Dubai is not like high on your list?
Not necessarily.
I was trying to think of the most like modern based city I could think of.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that's historical there was Tom Cruise was there for Mission Impossible.
Yeah, that was a pretty big moment in history.
Right.
I mean, honestly, Dubai might have a very rich historical significance, but when I think of Dubai, I think of like the absurd modernity of it, not really its past.
Yeah,
but that's probably my Western culture bias showing, maybe.
Yeah, definitely, you're very biased.
was that our cities? Did we get through them all?
Yeah, you said London. You said yours was the same.
All right, what's next?
All right, mine are books read in 2017, because I am not a connoisseur of new releases.
No,
so.
Yeah. I don't think I read any books that came out this year.
This was very difficult to me because I include like comic books and everything that I've read. And like, I think my Goodreads goal last year that I set was 150 books. And I think I hit 169.
Including comic books.
Yeah. But I did count, and I think of actual physical books that are not short stories, I read 55.
Dang.
So this is a hard list for me to whittle down.
But you get three.
And I'm not going to include comic books.
Okay. Let's get to it. So I can start then?
Yeah. Well, yeah. What's your number three?
All right. So my number three was Ready Player One. I'm pretty sure I read that this year.
Oh, okay.
If not, it was at the end of last year. I'm not exactly positive. Yeah. But that was the only like sort of pop culture-y book I feel like I've read this year.
Yeah.
So it was fine. You know, it was good. I'm excited about the movie.
More excited about the movie than the book, personally.
Yeah, agreed. It's worth, it's like a fun kind of action book, I guess.
Yeah.
Which I very rarely read anymore. So I think that the novelty of it for me was almost a big plus.
Okay. So for me, I'm going to say, here's what I put. I just put Sanderson, and that's the author.
Right.
Because I read, you know, a whole
this
bunch
is the, of- is it Cosmere?
Yep, yep.
I got it. Look at that. I'm a good friend.
Yep. So I just kind of put him down as a general category because that's,
yeah,
like,
that's fair.
You know, it's Way of Kings stuff and all kinds of random stuff. And I've had a lot of fun with that. And I still have tons more to read. So
nice.
So that's my number three. What's your number two?
My number two, I haven't actually finished it. I've actually been slowly reading it through the whole year because it's kind of heavy reading. But it's called Lion of the Valley. It's basically a history book about the city of St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
It starts in like 1764, and I think it goes into the 80s, but I haven't obviously gotten there yet. But that has been a very, very like fun, you know, as somebody who works downtown and spends a lot of time in the city itself and around it, I've really enjoyed reading through that. So
yeah. Okay. My number two would probably be, this is tough, The Bell Jar, which obviously is a very old book and it's a classic.
Obviously.
I really liked this book, though. I actually, okay, I could care less whether things are classics or not, because there's a lot of classics that are super boring. So I actually avoided this for a while because it just didn't sound interesting to me, honestly. But I finally got around to reading it. And it's on my number two because it was sort of like an all-around experience. Like, the book itself is very interesting. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with what it is.
I have no idea.
Oh, okay. It's basically just a short book, and it's a slow descent into madness. Like, it's someone who's this girl living in New York in, like, I guess, like, the 30s or 40s. And, you know, hanging out with college friends and stuff like that. And you're getting all this first perspective. So you're in her head and you don't realize it while you're reading it.
So you're giving, but, are you giving stuff away right now?
No. I'm letting you know what the plot is. Like, this is what it's described as in
it. Okay.
But that's what the book is. It's just a slow, like, you're slowly in her head watching her, like, slowly slip and have weird thoughts, and they just expound and expound and expound. And so where you're at the beginning and the end are two different places, but you don't really notice it because you're reading along with it along the way, if that
it's
makes
like
sense.
It's like watching Scarface.
Yeah, that might be. And what was interesting about it in addition is, this isn't a spoiler because this is real life, but Sylvia Plath is the person that wrote it, and she's sort of known for her tragic death. And a lot of the similarities revolving around her death were partly because of depression. And she was so good at writing that book because she had struggled with it in the past prior to that.
Right.
And so all the events surrounding her death and her husband, and even just some lines in the book, are just like eerily this whole like big picture sort of thing. So I actually, if anybody ever reads the book, I also recommend reading her Wikipedia page as well, like the whole thing, because it's like really crazy. So that's all I'll say about that. But that's why it made it to my list, because it was something that I wasn't expecting to like and just sort of slog through because someone told me to read it. And I ended up being like really invested and then doing research into.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. My number one is Creativity Inc. Have you ever read that?
No, I've heard of that though. Why have I heard of that?
It is Ed Catmull, who is the, I believe he's president of Pixar, or at least he was. He was part of the original three of creating Pixar, and then kind of from an operation side of things led Pixar through the epicness that they became. And then the book even goes in through Disney acquiring them and the stuff that they did with Disney Animation Studios, which is incredible. You know, from not even looking at the book, it's incredible whenever, like, watching it just as a bystander, whenever you saw Disney buy Pixar and Disney Animation Studios was struggling so much. And then it was just like immediately they started pumping out just amazing movies.
Yeah.
And it kind of goes through a lot of the sort of business process things that they did to try and encourage like good creative output. It's really great.
I'm going to read that.
Yeah.
Because I like stuff like that. Like, this is not on my list, but one of my like favorite books that I read last year just from a pure entertainment standpoint was that Secret History of Star Wars. And it was just because...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't know. It's like reading a long form documentary that's really detailed and involved.
Right.
And I love that sort of stuff. So I just added that.
Yeah. This is kind of like it's almost like a business book, except it would be like if it was inside of a world that you love.
Yeah.
Cause I don't usually like business books that much because I can't stand like jargon.
Yeah.
But even the jargon that he uses in this one is just, it's interesting because it's wrapped up in Pixar movies, and he's giving so many interesting anecdotes about the process of creating a lot of those movies that it's just great.
Yeah.
It's a lot like I'm Feeling Lucky, which is a book about, I think it's employee number 57 or something of Google. it was the first like marketing person that they hired.
Oh, okay.
And so he's this marketing guy who's in his like who's like middle age that gets hired to Google in the 90s and is like, you know, they're nothing at that point. And it's just kind of cataloging his perspective of all of this stuff. And it's kind of similar where it's like,
yeah,
normally this kind of book would drive me crazy, but the guy writing it has such an interesting way of explaining it, and it's kind of almost a story in itself.
Yeah,
that it's really entertaining on its own.
Yeah, I actually added that to my Audible though. I'm gonna look into that. So my number one is kind of a cheat, but it's honestly a split between Blade Runner and Handmaid's Tale. Like, those are two books I read this year that I loved both of them. They were just great.
When you say Blade Runner, you mean
Electric Dude? Do sheep dream of androids dream of electric sheep? Which is why I said Blade Runner. So yeah, it actually was renamed Blade Runner.
Oh, like, was it?
For a lot of copies.
I mean, that makes sense.
If you search either on, like, a lot of these search engines know to
right.
come
yeah,
up
that
with,
makes sense.
Yeah. Anyways. So yeah, that, those two books, Handmaid's Tale obviously has been around for a while. Both of those books actually have been around for a long time, and I just never read them until this year, and they were both incredible science fiction books. So yeah, there's that.
Awesome. Let's move on to my number three, which is directors, which I was meaning to be directors of all time, but I'm also realizing I didn't specify that either.
Yeah, mine are of all time.
Okay,
this
great.
Is more of a you thing, but I did get some. So
nice. Do you want to start?
Mine are all going to be really stereotypical. My third would just be J.J. Abrams.
Yeah. Yeah, he's in my honorable mentions for sure.
Yeah, I'm not always happy that he does like the remix stuff where like particularly with Force Awakens and the second Star Trek movie, doing a lot of like, hey, you remember this plot that you love? Here, we're going to do this again and remix it a little bit. Like I and that's the thing is, it's like it's not even a big criticism of him because I still actually liked both of those films. It's just sort of like a slight tendency of his that I don't care for. But he's also done tons of like original stuff, and I just like that he's so unpredictable. Like I liked Cloverfield.
Right. I think if we get more of his original stuff,
yeah,
I could see him moving up pretty high because he is very similar to like a Spielberg. He's just like an extraordinarily solid director who can pretty much pull off anything. The only thing with him is there's nothing on like a technical level that he does that like really stands out for me, which is kind of the only thing that pushed him off of my top three.
Yeah. And I get that. So.
But if I hear he's directing something, I'm just instantly like, yep, I'll see it. Great.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm the same way. Now, yeah, I actually was going to say one of my honorable mentions was Quentin Tarantino, and he just didn't make the list because he's sort of like his whole thing is doing directly bad plot or directing moves in order to accomplish something. And it's just one of those things that he can pull it off for some reason. But
yeah, he's like the opposite. He's not consistent.
Exactly.
And he's not like going to be able to pull anything off. But he's incredibly accomplished at a specific style, and he does something incredibly well that nobody else seems to really be able to pull off.
Exactly.
I personally don't really like Quentin Tarantino movies, but I definitely can appreciate what he does.
It's weird. I'm not a big fan of his older, like the older you get into Quentin Tarantino. It's not that they're bad. Like, I think they're all fine movies. I just, like you said, I don't care for them. Even big ones like Pulp Fiction, like I've seen it a couple times and it's a fine movie, but it's not one I enjoy watching. But his more recent movies, the more recent he gets, I generally like those, like Inglourious Basterds, Django Unchained, and Hateful Eight. I liked all three of those a lot. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I do enjoy him, but yeah, he didn't make my list simply because it's kind of hard to fit him into a category of what exactly he does. And he kind of purposely does things that directors aren't supposed to do. It's just he's able to pull them off.
Right.
Somehow. So.
All right. So my number three is Christopher Nolan.
Okay.
Which he's been kind of annoying me more and more lately as he seems to just hold on to the past as his like ultimate thing. Like everything is about it being film and practical sets. And I feel like he will hinder a movie's vision for the sake of not using visual effects or something. And so that gets a little frustrating. But
are you saying that he should destroy the past?
Kill it if he has to.
Oh, okay.
No, like, but he does something that basically nobody else seems to be able to pull off, which is to make, like, borderline art movies inside of blockbusters.
Yeah, the word that always comes to mind when I think Christopher Nolan is pacing, like, he just makes these long movies, but they're built so well. Like, even in Dark Knight Rises, which is a great movie, but it's one where people had some problems with certain plot points. Like, it was never because anything felt jarring as far as flow, if that
right,
makes sense.
Right, it's after, like, the fact when you think about it.
Which right.
Really,
like, so
isn't that big. Well, yeah. It's not that big of a fall for a blockbuster, but especially for his movies, it's a little bit more frustrating.
Yeah, I could see that. I'm just saying, as far as pacing goes, though, I always feel like he's good at building, like his tone always feels consistent no matter what he's doing. And it just, like, by the time you get to the, like, every single movie I've ever seen with him, even ones I didn't care for as much, I always felt like there was a point in the movie where, oh, this has got to be the end. And then lo and behold, there's a whole nother, like, incredible 30-minute finale.
Right. Yeah.
After the fact.
I think my thing with him that I really, really like is, I mean, A, he can build an action sequence as good as, you know, almost anybody.
Yeah.
But the bigger thing is he weaves these, like, extremely, I don't necessarily want to say intricate, but kind of complicated rules.
Yeah.
And he somehow pulls off exposition in a way where he can pull off, like, telling you a whole bunch of rules and then following those rules in a very, very satisfying way to tell a story.
Yeah.
Better than almost anybody else. Like, when you look at, especially his non-Batman movies, like, you know, like Inception or The Prestige or Memento or something like that, he tells non-traditional, like, or non-linear almost storylines in a way that you can follow totally.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, you're kind of unraveling it all in your brain. And it's just very satisfying, I guess. Which is, that's kind of the reason why Dunkirk, I think, was a disappointment for me. It's not that it was bad. It was that I was expecting kind of that more intricate plot. And it was the opposite. It was completely deconstructed.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I mentioned that he was my number two, which is why I've been talking about him as well.
So. Okay, yeah, yeah. No, I figured he'd be on your list. So then my number two then, I guess, is David Fincher.
Okay.
It's not that his movies are my favorite. But as far as a director goes, I almost can't think of anybody who's a better director than he is. He is just ridiculously incredible on the, like, technical side of directing and, like, blocking a scene. And, like, I've watched I don't know how many hours of, like, film analysis on just the way that he uses the camera and tells stories visually. It's completely amazing. And I almost wish he kind of fell into that, like, what a lot of directors do where, you know, once they get big enough, they kind of get put on other franchises or they kind of pull into PG-13 from R.
Yeah.
Because I don't necessarily care for his sort of, like, the maturity of his movies.
Yeah.
You know, they're either really bloody or really graphic or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't really like that part of it. Which is why his movies aren't always my favorite movies, but just his direction is just incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've seen plenty of his movies as well. Is he the one that ended up directing, like, Gone Girl? Or
yes,
is that someone
he did
else?
Gone Girl, yeah.
Yeah, that was
I think that's why Social Network is one of my favorite movies, like, of all time.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, a more toned-down David Fincher movie that I can just watch over and over and over again.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, who's your number one?
My number one is very cliche. It's Steven Spielberg.
Yep, definitely.
Yeah.
I don't feel bad about being cliche about that at all.
Well, I would say Peter Jackson, but he just doesn't have a lot of stuff on his roster yet of acclaim, and Hobbit movie was a bit of indulgence gone haywire.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, so that's not necessarily the sign of a great director, even if I'm okay with what he ended up making. So
yeah, Spielberg's resume is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, it's completely ridiculous to me how consistent and varied his portfolio is.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, he has certain things about himself that you find, like we've talked about before, there's lots of dad issues in his movies.
Dad issues, like, fear of flight, and just the way he blocks a scene is almost Fincher-like. But he does it in these giant blockbuster movies.
Yeah, there's so much diversity, though, like War of the Worlds, E.T., Munich, the new movie The Post that's coming out. Who did Terminal? Was that him as well, right?
I don't think that was him.
Oh, maybe not.
Did you ever see Adventures of Tintin?
Yeah, I saw that a long time ago. I didn't.
That was him, too. It was just like...
It was okay.
Nice. The movie itself, honestly, I don't remember that much, but I remember just the, like, visuals so much. Like, it felt like a Spielberg movie.
Yeah.
He somehow can tell such a wide variety of stories with very different tones, and yet they all feel very Spielberg.
Yeah. Even, like, even Hook.
He's just so good.
Which you finally got to watch this year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I should have put Hook on one of my lists.
Such a weird movie.
Yeah. No, I remember that. Anyway, yeah. Yeah, the other... So, really quick on my honorable mentions, because I have a lot. Edgar Wright, who I love.
Oh, yeah.
James Cameron and George Lucas. Not because they have the best movies in the world.
Yeah.
But because what they've done for cinema is, like, almost unparalleled. Like, those guys, especially George Lucas, have just changed the way every movie that you see is in an awesome way. And then Alfonso Cuarón, I don't know how you say his name. I really like his stuff, too. All right, let's get your number four. We need to get clicking here.
Albums of the year. This was actually, I actually do listen to a lot of music, but I find that more and more I listen to audiobooks and podcasts. So I didn't pay heavily attention to stuff that came out this year.
So mine, just like you said, I basically listen to podcasts and audiobooks now. And so almost every time I listen to music, it's because, or it'll be like, the stuff I'm used to listening to because I haven't listened to it in a while.
Yeah.
So all of mine are soundtracks.
Oh, okay.
Because they'd be movies I saw that I really like.
I'm interested in seeing which one this is.
My third one is Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, okay.
Which was good, yeah. You know?
My number three is...
I haven't listened to
the
that
Justice League soundtrack. Because I really like that Danny Elfman was doing that. What's your number two?
My number two is Stranger Things 2.
Okay.
Which is... just more of the Stranger Things soundtrack that I loved. So I actually have listened to that quite a bit.
All right. My number two is an album that actually came out this year by a band. I listen to a lot of like modern psychedelic or blues rock or things like that. And so there was actually a handful of release of bands that I listened to that I really liked that came out this year. But I just had to pick one that kind of represented that category. And it is... I don't know if you know who this band is. You might know the name, but they're actually pretty big, and it's Cage the Elephant.
Nope.
And they came out with an album this year called Unpeeled, and it's a live album in a kind of sort of way. And I normally hate live albums. Like I just don't care.
I'm
for
with
it.
You on that.
But this is one of those where it sounds like it was like actually recorded. Well, it couldn't have been in a studio because I guess there's a, well, you don't really hear the crowd a lot, though, at all. So however they recorded it, I'm not sure. But it sounds like really good recording that doesn't sound like you're in the middle of a concert. But it's like different arrangements, and it's like 20 tracks long of like stuff that they've done, including covers. And it's all like very acoustic based. So it's like they do this sort of like throwback sounding rock anyway. And so that, with a lot of the electric kind of stripped out of it, was like, I don't know, somehow I really enjoyed it a lot. So that was my number two. A lot of people know who Cage the Elephant is, and even if you don't like live albums, I recommend getting that Unpeeled one on your Apple Music or Spotify. It's really good.
I'll go ahead and give it a shot. All right. My number one is the La La Land soundtrack, which the movie came out last year, but I don't think I saw it until this year. And then immediately started listening to the soundtrack like I do oftentimes after movies.
Yeah.
But that happened to be the first time that my son like really kind of paid attention to the music I was playing.
Oh, yeah.
And he got like obsessed with it. Like he still loves listening to it.
I do really like that soundtrack.
Oh, I love it. I
kind of forgot about
because
it when I made this.
The songs themselves are good. You know, they're fine. But like the jazz stuff.
Yeah.
And if you're listening to the like the whole soundtrack, it just has all these jazz songs in the middle. And they're so, it's just so good.
You know what? I'm going to replace my Justice League with La La Land.
Yeah.
Because I forgot about the soundtrack. But yeah, I probably am going to break it out after this.
Yeah, it's excellent. All right. What's your number one?
My number one is very populist. Kendrick Lamar's album that came out this year, Damn.
Ah, not Taylor Swift.
No, because I actually don't really care for rap.
You made me do.
Rap or hip hop music too much. It's just never been something I've been heavily into. And the fact that there's a handful of artists out there that can get me to purchase their albums is sort of significant for me personally. So,
did you hear that he's doing the soundtrack for Black Panther?
No, that's incredible. Yeah.
I don't know if it's the soundtrack. I just saw the headline. I'm gonna.
Oh, it might be like
really
he's
quick.
Doing like a song. That would make more sense.
He's producing the Black Panther soundtrack.
That's pretty cool.
Oh, and the lead single is out.
Okay, that's cool.
So that movie looks so fantastic. I'm really excited.
Yeah, it does. That makes me even more excited now, just that he's in charge of the music choices. Because he's one of those weird people that he's still got like a really rough, unrefined edge to his sort of rap music that's sort of more traditional, and for some reason he's made it as big as he is, and it's just really kind of odd to me. But I'm not super into hip-hop,
like it, so.
Yeah, so I'm not gonna like I'm not gonna pretend to know all the history of it or anything, but
Childish Gambino is basically all I really dip my toes into the hip-hop
I do
world.
Like him. He's
I do too.
I like too. All right, your category.
All right. Flags. Yes.
God.
I was surprised you didn't veto this one. I kind of threw it out there like, we'll see if he lets me do this.
Oh, I don't have real answers here. Okay, but I do have answers.
You don't have answers?
Not real ones.
That's fine. I wanted more goofy things. We've been very serious so far.
Okay, all right.
Let's get goofy.
So my number three?
Yeah, your number three.
Is Broke Hussein Obama. That's what I wrote down.
What does that mean?
I got a lot of political things here in these flag categories.
That's a flag? Is there a flag for it?
No. I'm just making it clear that that we're supposed to hate Obama here in America.
I don't understand what you're saying.
So
the category is flags,
yeah.
And you said what?
So my three flags, because I thought that it would be unpatriotic to pick anything but the American flag. The American flag.
So you're saying the American flag is all three of your picks?
Yeah.
That's hilarious. I'm very, very entertained by that.
So I got the American flag. I got the second one as MAGA. And I got the third one as Broke Hussein Obama.
Wow. Great.
Yeah, I'm not big into flags. I'm sorry.
Well, but you don't have to be big into them. You've seen flags.
I honestly cannot think of one that I have feelings about. It's like when... To
okay,
me,
fine,
no,
fine.
I'm not saying there's no justification for this. So by all means, let's hear your flags. But I'm just saying, like, to me, this is sort of like when someone goes, what's your favorite color? Everybody has a favorite color. I'm like, no, I really don't.
I don't have a favorite color, but you're aware of colors.
Yeah, but if someone were to ask me, like, rank the colors, I'm not going to be able to do it because I literally
all
don't
right.
care.
Fine, Dan. Fine. You could have vetoed this one.
I'm sorry.
You
did
had
I,
that option.
Did I trample on your flags here?
You did. You did. I like flags, Dan.
Clearly. You're not going to tell us what your favorite flags are?
All right. So my favorite flag is Lofa County, Liberia. No, this is my third favorite flag is Lofa County, Liberia. Have you ever seen
A county in Liberia?
Yeah. Have you ever seen the Liberian county flags?
You're going real obscure with this.
Okay. Surely I've shown you these before.
I think you have, because I vaguely remember you saying they got a bunch of interesting ones.
They do. So let me send you a picture here. I'm sure you've seen this one, though.
What was that weird flag that John Oliver was talking about?
I don't know.
For that one country, was it like, was that New Zealand?
Oh, don't get me started on the New Zealand flag referendum.
Yeah.
That was, that's the one. I'm not even joking. That was very frustrating. No, so Liberia has a bunch of flags.
Yeah.
I'm going to send this over to you. Okay. I'm sure I've sent you this before, but it's endlessly entertaining to me. So not the flag that you see there. That is Liberia's flag itself, which is fine. If not,
I'm clicking on
a little stealing of America's style. But each county has its own flag. And these flags are nothing short of incredible.
Oh, yeah.
But I had to pick, I had to pick one to go on here.
Yeah, those are interesting.
And look at the Lofa County one, which is the, like, I don't know, eighth one, I think.
Yep.
If you're looking on your phone. It's got the hand holding some sort of weirdly shaded pole thing.
No, I don't. That's awful.
That's an official flag.
That's awful.
And those river lines, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
We won't focus too much on these, though, because, you know, any flag person is going to be tired of hearing about, you know, Liberian county flags. That's
right.
Go-to material for vexillologists.
Right.
So we'll move on to my number two, which is Nepal's flag. Are you familiar with their flag?
No, I am not.
What?
What did you expect me to say? Yes. Okay, yes, I'm very familiar with Nepal's flag.
You'll recognize Nepal's flag. You're looking at it?
Yeah.
Isn't that great? I like Nepal's flag because... Do you want to describe it to people?
Because it's not a traditional flag. It's two triangles.
Yeah. It's a great like different shape. And especially whenever you're parading flags around, like at the Olympics or something, it looks really cool. You know? I like unique shaped flags.
So number one.
It's great. Okay, fine. All right, my last flag is kind of boring, but I feel like it's just super iconic and really great, which is the Union Jack, the UK's flag.
Oh, okay. Oh,
Doesn't get a whole lot better than that.
Well, I mean, you hate America, but other than that, apparently, I mean, let the record show that I picked the American flag, and I said something about making
American flag has a little bit too much detail because of all the stars. Yep. But it's worth it because it's kind of a cool little, like, we add a star rule. Like, America has, like, 70 flags, I think, official U.S. flags, because each version is official. And then within each number of stars, there's a bunch of different shapes.
Yeah.
You probably haven't seen these. But there's even one, I think, where the stars are in the shape of a star.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's weird.
But we got circles. We got all sorts of crazy stuff going on up in that canton.
Yeah, I do like the British one.
I also had, because I didn't want to put this on my list because it's horrible, but I have to give props to the rebel battle flag of the Confederates.
Yeah.
That's, while it represents something terrible, it's a pretty good flag as far as flag design. It's very iconic.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
And I'd have to give the same props to the Nazi flag, which has successfully elicited horror and evil basically since, which is the sign of a good flag.
Yeah.
Because it definitely embodied the people who flew it.
I think the ideas behind the flag, because like that swastika symbol I have heard in Eastern cultures is actually a symbol of peace.
Yeah, so. I've heard that too. I don't know if that's one of those things that you read on the side of a cereal box. That's not true, but
yeah, I'm not super invested in finding out, but
yes, right. I try not to spend too much time
searching Nazi
focusing
flags.
On Nazi symbolism. Yeah. Unless I'm watching Indiana Jones.
Right.
So there you go. Thank you for,
and by the way, before I go to the next topic, I apologize. Like if it sounds like I'm purposely like not laughing or it's hard for me to laugh at the moment because it hurts my chest, so that's why I'm not trying to like cold shoulder you and make your segment sound bad. But
I
apologize if I just sound mute on the other.
We'll let the viewers decide if all of that chest pain suddenly came about when we started talking about flags.
Oh, that was intentional. That was a cold shout out. Like that was just
All right, your topic.
Podcasts.
Podcasts. All right, I can move through mine pretty quick.
Okay.
So mine aren't really in a particular order because I just tried to pick kind of the top from each style of podcast I listen to, if that makes sense. So at the bottom, I have the 538 Politics podcast.
Yeah.
Which is a fantastic fantastic podcast, like analyzing politics through sort of the filter of like data analysis, which is a much more fun way of viewing politics than punditry.
And what is that again?
538.
Oh, yeah, yeah, 538.
Okay. Yeah, they have a really great website and stuff, too.
Is
but their
the
podcast.
Nate Silver, right?
That's Nate Silver, and it's like a group of people.
Gotcha.
It's really just them discussing it, and there's, you know, there's like a regular journalist and a guy who's basically just an expert on statistics and polling.
Gotcha.
And, yeah, it's just, it's a really good sort of like separate yourself from the emotion way of following it. It makes it feel more like sport.
Yeah.
Not in a bad way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. What's your three or third?
I'll say the Bald Move Network, which they just do a bunch of entertainment podcasts. And I like them because they're actually pretty straightforward, normal sounding guys that do really good analysis of whatever TV show podcast they're running. And then, but they're like easy to listen to, and then they'll just randomly, they can be pretty funny at times, but it's not like a comedy thing. It's just like, it sort of comes up organically with a lot of things. And there's a lot of like inside jokes if you listen to their podcasts enough.
Yeah.
Like for instance, they it's been hilarious watching them follow Walking Dead for the past few years.
Oh and, gosh, let's just
you know,
move on.
They,
I don't want to hear about The Walking Dead.
It's not about The Walking Dead. My point
it
was
is, though. It is though.
No, it wasn't. My point was is they've come up with like their own words to like reference certain things and stuff like that that they'll like bring up in another podcast for another TV show.
Ah, okay.
And people will just sort of understand and get the reference because they listen to other shows on their network. So like they had a really good Stranger Things 2 one where they did one episode, even though it was a binge show, they still did like one episode per episode. And like just stuff like that. Like they're really good. They got me into The Leftovers. They're the ones that kept bringing it up. And so, yeah, they have a whole network of movies and all kinds of stuff that's really good. So that's
nice.
That's, yeah.
My number two is one that I'm a little behind on right now, but it's kind of the podcast that really got me into podcasts in the first place, and I still love, which is Freakonomics.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you've ever listened to them, but
I have.
It's yeah, they're
I like
great.
It.
It's economics, but like in a sort of more approachable way, and I definitely highly, highly, highly recommend that one.
Yeah, I like them. I have to listen to that in like when I get in the mood. I don't know,
yep,
like
that's exactly what I'm like. I listen to it in big chunks.
Well, you know, yeah, I was gonna say, you know how I told you like I was a like referential personality type. For some reason, when you told me to listen to that for the first time, it was during the summer. And so I actually don't listen to that throughout the year. And then during the summer, I'll just like spend a week or two just listening to only that podcast.
That's really funny that you say that because it's kind of similar for me.
Yeah.
Except it's whenever I like mow the lawn. So
oh,
it
okay.
kind of is summer, but it's like, for whatever reason, I listen to that a lot more when I'm doing like yard work.
And I do the same thing with like Dan Carlin's Hardcore History. Or
yes, it, that
stuff
is exactly
like that.
In the same boat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that one. I should have put that in my list. Oh,
yeah.
Well. All right. What's your number two?
My number two, and not because it's a great podcast, but just because it's the one, it's one that I get a lot of entertainment about. And it's normally, I judge these on which ones do I get excited at whenever I see them show up in my feed. And my next one is God Awful Movies, which is just a really crass, over the top movie reviewing podcast that they definitely like write jokes ahead of time and stuff. And it's not like Mystery Science Theater where you're getting the jokes as the movie's playing. It's them walking through the movie, doing a really long 2-hour review after the fact.
Ah.
And they mostly just watch bad, awful movies. So I
there
have a
go.
Lot of fun with that. Yeah.
All right. My number one is probably not going to be that big of a surprise, but Hello Internet. Definitely feels like it should go up there. I always feel like I get tired of it and I might let a couple episodes like bundle up and then I'll start listening to it again and I just get totally sucked in. Something
oh, yeah.
about the way that those two interact and the types of topics that they cover.
I just don't listen to their Star Wars episodes.
Yeah, that's the only ones I have to skip. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a whole bunch of other like two friends talking podcasts that they have sort of opened my eyes to, and now I listen to lots of them. But I picked one, and it had to be them.
So my number one is a weird split between two. And it's weird because they're complete opposite ends in different types of podcasts. But my first place, the ones that I get most
excited.
You're
really finding a way to get these more than three, aren't you?
It really is just like these are the two that are.
All right.
But I like the Bad Christian Podcast, which is like an alternative religious community podcast. And I like Sam Harris Podcast, which is definitely a more like political / skeptical related interview show. So those are the ones that I kind of have up there at the top that I get excited whenever new episodes come out.
Best trilogy of all time.
Ooh, I like this one.
Yeah, this one I had to... I'll say, I thought there was going to be a lot, and it was a smaller list than I was expecting. But go ahead and you start. What's your number three?
My number three is the new Planet of the Apes movie.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about those, but yeah, those definitely
because
be up there.
It's very rare. I won't rehash all of it, but it's very rare that I think that a movie series is better than the originals that are also in themselves classics, or at least the first movie was. And this movie, this rebooted a franchise, was much better and deeper and came out with three really solid movies. So
yeah, definitely agree. My number three, I was pretty split between two. I had to cut out the Bourne trilogy, which I really like. And I actually watch more than the number three I chose, but I think the other three are better, which is the Cornetto trilogy, or the Three Flavors Cornetto trilogy,
Does that really count, though, or is that just what people call it?
I mean, it was intentional.
What do you mean?
Like, it was a trilogy. It was, when the third one came out, it was the third of the trilogy. Like, that was intentional. So the listener understands. We're talking about, this is Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and End of... the one I always get wrong, End of the World or whatever.
Yeah, World's End.
World's End, At the World's End, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
By Edgar Wright.
Yeah.
They're just really, really great movies. But if it makes you feel better, I'll make Bourne my third. Does that make you feel better?
Not really, because I don't like the Bournes as a trilogy. And there's four of them now. So
yeah, but those three are definitely a trilogy. And the third one's my favorite of the three. So to me, it's a series that like escalates through them, which is...
Yeah, no, I actually, they're all very good. I was just going to say the only thing that I think is sort of jarring is the first one is very cinematography different than the other two.
What?
The first one is filmed very much like a very regular action movie because it was made years before... and there was none of that like handheld style stuff. And then
that was the one that sort of broke that like style.
I don't know. Go back and watch them. They're very different from the first to the second two. The second two are like Supremacy is the one that gets all like handheld and green tinted and
what?
Like when I think of Bourne Identity, I think there's a lot of like yellows and very steady cam and everything like that. I don't know. I'd have to go rewatch it.
No,
but I've always
all three of
that.
Those have that sort of. I can't remember the cinematographer's name, but that style that's like that handheld, kind of annoying. Honestly,
maybe it's more pronounced in the second one because I didn't feel that way about the first one. But it has been a long time, so
yeah. Anyway, either way, I like those three movies, so I'll make that my three so that you feel better.
Okay.
What's your third?
I already said my third.
Planet of the Apes. Oh, right. Yeah, you started. What's your number two?
The original Star Wars.
Yeah.
The original Star Wars trilogy. I think that's kind of a classic that's hard to beat. So
that is mine as well.
Yeah. Not the prequels?
I didn't want to make too many people angry.
Right.
I'm not even going to say what I was going to say. Yep, we'll just go with the original trilogy. But the special edition, obviously.
Yeah.
Actually, I won't get into that. All right. What's your number one?
So my number one trilogy, which you could probably guess, is the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
No. Oh, yeah.
I just think it's a perfect example of an adaptation, which you've said it like this before, where people even though he made some changes from the books, were very satisfied with everything that he did for the sake of adapting them.
Yes, for sure.
And they, of course, won all the money and all the awards, and I think people were generally pleased with that trilogy.
Yeah, definitely.
And it put fantasy on the map in sort of a real way. Not that there weren't fantasy movies that people liked before that, but...
It definitely seemed to open up a world. Like,
yeah.
I think you'd see that as an inflection point in the fantasy genre as far as film goes.
Yeah, exactly.
My number one is arguably one of my favorite movie series of all time, which I don't feel like a lot of people are in the same boat as me on this one, but I love the Ocean's movies. Ocean's 11, oh, okay. Ocean's 12, and Ocean's 13.
Yeah, those are very good.
I could watch those movies and have just randomly all the time.
Yeah.
They are my go-to, like, I want to put something on while I work on something. I'm just going to throw one of the Oceans in.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, and I just found out that there is an Ocean's 8 coming out, and I am ridiculously excited.
Yep, I'm tentatively excited.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I was just going to say my only honorable mention would have just have been probably the Dark Knight Nolan trilogy.
Yeah, I had that. I had Lord of the Rings in there too for honorable.
Yeah, yeah, those were hard
as well
to
as
cut.
Indiana Jones and the
Back to the Future.
Back to the Future and Tobey Maguire Spider-Man.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah. Next, what's yours?
My next one is superheroes.
All right.
Mine
are surprisingly rough for me, actually.
Mine are a bit more common than you'd think of someone that reads comic books, because this is much different than best comic books or
exactly
like that,
the hero themselves. All right, so I guess I start.
Yeah, go ahead.
So my number three, I almost couldn't find a number three that I really liked that much, but I guess I kind of ended up going with Iron Man.
Okay.
Just because I really like the Robert Downey Jr. Iron Man. I don't
yeah, that's
really
fair.
Care about the character that much outside of his particular acting of it, but
yeah.
That was as good as I could come up with, really.
No, so. that's great. Yeah, yeah, that's the one you know, and that's fine. So mine is Shazam. I've always liked character. It's a old character that in the past even outsold Superman for a time, was sued out of existence by DC, promptly bought by DC, and is now being underpublished by DC. But... when he is published, he's generally a fan favorite.
There you go. He's getting a movie, right?
Yeah. Dwight The Rock Johnson is going to be playing the villain and apparently spearheading that project. So I hope he does a good job because it is one of my favorite. So that's my number three.
My number two is Deadpool.
Oh, okay.
Again, not because the movie is my favorite thing ever, but I love that style of like meta humor. And that's basically all he is, which I like.
Right. My number two is Superman, and I realize that's like, it seems like it's sort of fashionable, including among yourself, to sort of like, oh, he's boring, he does too much, this and that. And I feel like he's kind of gotten a bad shake, and that is partly because of his portrayal in more recent years, and the fact that there just hasn't been a big, like, not a really big characteristic Superman movie since the 80s when Christopher Reeves was him. So it's been a while since Superman has been that big. And
although I would include the Christopher Reeves Superman in my he's boring category. But
most others wouldn't.
Yeah, they might not. I'm just saying for me personally.
I don't know. I just think like he's my number two because he was the first. He's iconic. There's despite the fact that people think he's boring, there actually is a lot of interesting stuff that has been done with him. His original purpose for creation was really interesting. And I just, I don't know. I like Superman.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
And I picked him over Batman, even though Batman obviously is up there, simply because Batman represents the more dark brooding side and, Superman is always represented or is supposed to represent the more light, happy side. So that's why I picked Superman.
Nice.
Yep.
All right. My number one, I think you'd probably guess this, is Spider-Man.
Yep, that's my number one as well.
He's pretty much the only superhero that I just, like, absolutely love. And I'm excited to go see a bad Spider-Man movie just because I like Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's weird, too, because I read a lot of comic books, but Spider-Man comics are probably the... I can't honestly say I've read even a full trade paperback of Spider-Man comics before. I do know quite a bit about him because, like, I've read his Wikipedia page history, and that's kind of an
that's most dump. All my knowledge of all comics is Wikipedia and you,
right? But so surprisingly, I actually, for Spider-Man being one of my favorite superheroes and me reading a lot of comics, I haven't read a lot of Spider-Man comics, But I just really liked the character. I liked all the movies, even the bad ones. Honestly, like, he's the most relatable, kind of for what I think are obvious reasons. He's a, you know, nerdy scientist person that gets superpowers and gets the girl and all that sort of stuff. And he's very relatable to teenagers.
Yeah, and he makes jokes while he does it, which, like, now is kind of a Marvel-y thing, but I don't really recall that being that much of a thing outside of Spider-Man before.
Exactly. It was always like a Deadpool and Spider-Man thing.
Exactly. And so for me, it's always been that, which and kind of his powers feel unique. It's not just some variation of flying and super punching and whatever.
Right.
And so I just really like that. And I've been wanting to see Miles for forever. Because I don't read the comics, so I never really got to see the Miles Morales character. So I'm super pumped about that animated movie coming out next year.
Yeah, and maybe that'll actually be the first Spider-Man that I read will be that one. Because they now have Brian Michael Bendis, who just moved to DC. He's the one that wrote or created Miles Morales' character, I believe. And they have big paperback volumes of it now for cheaper.
Oh, nice.
And so I might actually read it, and because people say it's amazing and incredible, and I kind of wish I was more familiar with the character. But yeah, there's not been anything out yet except for that Spider-Verse movie that's coming out, which looks really cool. So
awesome.
Yeah, all right, you go.
Superheroes done. Next.
Done.
All right, what's the next one? Is it me?
Yeah.
Conspiracy theories. What is your third favorite conspiracy theory?
Okay. That's what I was going to say. How are we framing this?
Yep. Favorites.
The ones we like and support.
Favorite is the one that entertains you the most.
Yeah. This one is sort of a weird, twisted, entertaining thing. And I'll explain why. But 9/11 conspiracy theorists.
Okay.
And the reason, honestly, is because I knew that existed. But my deep delve into it was through... A black hole on YouTube of Alex Jones videos one day whenever I discovered who he was.
Okay.
And I mean, full disclosure.
Jet fuel doesn't melt steel, Dan.
Yeah. He's a crazy person. And I understand this, but there is no end of entertainment of seeing him just be completely refuted by someone that knows what they're talking about when he's yelling at them on the street. And and he'll just keep going and changing the subject. And it's an incredible case study in
denial.
I don't know, arrogance and denial. Yeah. Ego.
Acting.
Yeah. It's just incredible. And so.
So it's not the theory itself as much as the one purporting the theory is entertaining.
Yeah. Because there's plenty.
That makes sense.
I mean, where were all the Jews on 9/11? They weren't in New York.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, is that a thing he said? I don't know if he said it, but I know that's a common thing that shows up. And
that was where they were not getting killed by during the Holocaust.
Right. Exactly. That one, 9/11, obviously is not entertaining, but the conspiracy theories and the links that people go around it is sort of interesting to me.
Fair enough. I mean, I had the thought fleetingly of that one, and then I was like, nope, I'm not touching that. But you went there, so that's fine.
I explained it well, I think.
I think you did. I think that was very good. That was fine.
Yeah.
All right. So I have as my third one is kind of the Roswell alien conspiracies.
Oh,
it's more of a genre than a specific one, but I've gotten plenty of entertainment out of the History Channel right as it started. It's weird. Well, this is before Ancient Aliens. Whenever it still did history. But every once in a while, peppered in weird theories, conspiracy theory shows. Now, my understanding is that's all it is. But at that point, they would be random smatterings. And I usually associate it with whenever I was homesick, I would watch History Channel all day. And you'd get these random midday shows about alien abductions and stuff.
Yeah.
And those were just great. There's just so many great stories and great people's faces that you get to see. All right, what's your number two?
My number two was, it's kind of hard to define. I was just going to say, anytime someone says deep state, it sort of just makes me laugh.
You're also leaning into the Alex Jones thing here, aren't you?
Yeah. But unfortunately, this was.
Can you do it? Can you do his voice with your voice all raspy like this?
No, I really can't.
Sad day.
But sorry, folks. Yeah, Deep State, I always thought was just an Alex Jones thing, but it was legitimized by our own president this weekend, who actually used the term in a tweet.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, saying of like accusing the FBI and all this of Deep State activities. Lovely. Or something. Yeah, so that's great that's now a mainstream term. But also, like, I've heard it from like a coworker before and stuff like that. And that was to me always something where it's like, as soon as someone says Deep State, I always know, oh, I need to stop talking to this person about this stuff and just sort of end the conversation. And I always do it politely. Like,
see, we're so different. I hear that and I just want to explore it.
I don't pull that thread. Yeah, I let it stay.
That's probably the safer thing to do.
Well, no, like there's a difference. So you get like a weird, sadistic, like entertainment out of poking people. And I understand that, but I probably could too. It's just sort of like, I don't have time. I don't want to invest.
I'm not poking. I'm trying to reach a deeper understanding.
Not really. You're trying to give them enough rope to hang themselves with, which I totally understand.
No, I genuinely just, it is curiosity more than anything.
Well, like the difference with me is like, I have to work with these people on a daily basis.
That's a good point.
Particularly with work. So like, I don't want to ever get in a position, because I can have these sorts of conversations and I could poke.
You don't want to be accused of being part of the deep state.
Yeah, exactly. And so, but I can also have the conversation and I won't get mad. But the problem is like, I personally can be very blunt about stuff and it comes across really like I'm just being a jerk.
Right.
And you don't necessarily do that. Like, you ask more probing questions. Like, I'm the type of person that, and I won't get mad, and I'm not even intending to get people mad, but I'll make them mad because I'll just go, well, but that's stupid.
Yeah. right.
It's like, but that doesn't make any sense whatsoever for this reason. And I don't see how a reasonable person would think that, because like, I don't really have a filter in that aspect. So that's why I normally just end the conversation. So I normally just don't think it's worth pursuing, because you're not going to change their mind.
Yeah, it's not about changing their mind. It's about understanding their point of view.
I guess. Yeah.
I mean, I'm like, I am both a complete like troll in the sense that you're describing.
Yeah.
Not necessarily troll, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But also, I legitimately do love asking people questions to understand how they can think the way that they think, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I do like understanding that.
Because I don't think people are just dumb. Like,
no,
I have a hard time getting myself to a point where I think a person is just not thinking rationally. I think they're just thinking with incomplete information.
I'm just saying there's a time and a place for that for me personally, and most of the time it's not worth it.
No. Yeah, and I understand that like working is maybe not the best place for that. I'm not saying you should. I'm trying to say like,
yeah,
I'm not always just trolling people.
right.
Just often.
Right. All right. So what's yours?
Are we on number two?
I think so.
All right. I had to give it to the classic, the original, which is JFK. Assassination.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought about that, but I'm not really too invested in it.
It's an interesting one. It's also fun because there isn't like necessarily a obvious answer. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's the like, it's not like the government says this is what happened. It's kind of like, this is what all of our evidence points to. Whether or not, you know, he was just motivated by outside parties because he aligned with them, or if he was actually associated with them. Like, there's no evidence. I don't think, I'm not really an expert on any of this, but as far as I know, there's no evidence to show that he was motivated by like Russians or Castro or something, but like he could have been. And it's sort of fun to think through.
Didn't a lot of that start with Oliver Stone's movie?
No, I think that came way later.
Oh, okay.
I think it started with, there was like a book. I can imagine the picture, the guy's face. I've watched a lot of documentaries on the rise of the conspiracies.
Yeah.
I've probably read and watched more on the conspiracy theory movement related to the JFK assassination than the actual assassination itself, because it is just fascinating. All right. What's your number one?
My number one is, this is my favorite, in all honesty, is the Monster Energy Drink lady.
I have no... Oh! This video. Is the Monster is actually a satanic, like, cult thing, right?
Yeah, because, like, if you notice, the M is three...
This is Monster Energy Drink, right?
Is the three Hebrew symbols put together up close for 666... And there's a cross in the middle of the O, and whenever you are drinking it, the can turns upside down, which turns the cross upside down. And it's like dead serious. And like at first, I thought it was sort of.
I didn't even know there was a video.
Yeah, it's a lady explaining it, and I thought it was.
We'll have to link that in the show notes. I'll watch that after this.
Yeah, originally I did not think that she was a legit person, but she's apparently like shown up. Like for like different things, and she is just like this crazy lady that thinks everything is like satanic, like because the monster thing isn't the only thing that she's known for either.
That's great.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites because just because
I totally forgot about
just
that
just
that's
watching
good.
Her explain it is just like amazing. Yeah.
So my number one, which I honestly just expected this to be both of ours. I'm surprised it wasn't even on your list. Is the Flat Earth Society.
Oh yeah. That is fun, but for different reasons that I don't want to be a jerk about. So,
am I going to offend a person that you know?
I know it's not that. It's my reason for having interest in it is that I think it's a parallel to so many things that a lot of modern religious people believe, but they wouldn't admit that it's that there's a parallel. So that's why I didn't want to bring it up because it's more controversial.
No, that makes sense.
Because I mean, you can cut this part, but basically, it's because it's a thing where it's biblically backed. Originally, it's argued that this is the only like it's the same arguments people make in the creationist literature, like verbatim. It's just applying it to a different scientific concept. That's all it is.
Interesting.
Like it's and it's not always like that nowadays. So there's plenty of flat earth people that are not religious at all. But if you look back in time in like the traditional like flat earth literature, that's what it is.
Yeah, because it was like 1800s is when it was founded.
Yeah.
And it was like a legit like society.
Yeah. And well, and I'm not sure, but I know a lot of the information put out because I've like seen old like pamphlets and stuff like that Wikipedia would put up or whatever, or reference rather, would like it would mention like biblical reasons, like because the Bible clearly says that, you know, there that when you look down, it's a flat disc and like that whole stuff.
I just like it because I really enjoy the lengths that they have to go through to explain themselves. Because unlike most conspiracy theories, this one's pretty straightforward to like sort of disprove.
Yeah.
And so all of these details have to be very specifically explained away. And I have not heard one that they don't have a admittedly convoluted, but actual answer for. That like makes at least on the surface level a little bit of sense.
Right.
Now, they've never answered why they don't just throw a camera on a hot air balloon and let it go up like a bunch of, you know, high school kids have done across the country. But there was a guy a couple of months or like maybe a month ago that had like attached a rocket to a bus or something that he was going to ride up in the air to prove the earth was flat. And then he mysteriously canceled it. Much to everybody's disappointment.
Yeah.
So now we'll never know the truth.
I just, there's certain things that I still don't completely understand about it. Like the only thing that certain problems with Flat Earth that you can really get down to at the end of the day is just say that the person that's telling you the problem is just lying. Because part of it is the whole, like Antarctica is basically like a plate. And so that's the bottom. That's the bottom, and so the Earth and the water and everything is on top of Antarctica. And Antarctica is the big landmass. That's the lip.
Oh, I haven't heard that.
Yeah. So that's sort of like part of like the physical imagery.
I thought it was just like turtles all the way down.
I don't know. No,
isn't that the thing? Yeah, I have not talked to somebody specific, like in person. Who believes this? So I have not gotten all those answers yet, but one day maybe we can have a Flat Earth Society member on the podcast.
No, probably not. No, we'll have to talk about that.
Oh, that would be so great. If any of you listening right now believe that the world is flat, I would love to have you on the show. That'd be really awesome. If you made it past us basically just making fun of everything you believe for the last 10 minutes.
Right. And like I said, I will be blunt. I'll just be like, that's just stupid. All right. Fictional universe. So this would be best fictional universe, whether movie, book, television.
Yeah, I figured you'd have a lot of these.
This was very tough for me because I like a lot of like fantasy and sci-fi, and that's all that is.
Mine was surprisingly not really that big, but you know, it's there.
I have just two quick honorable mentions before I do my number three. And I would just say Star Wars and Game of Thrones, just because. And I put Game of Thrones in honorable just because it's not even finished yet. And then I put Star Wars, not because of the world, but more just because it's open. Like, it's a big open sandbox. It's actually not a fully realized universe because, as we see, there's constantly mystery with, like, how will they do this with the Force next or what, you know.
That's part of what makes it great.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. And that's why I just wanted to make sure I honorably mentioned those. But my number three is going to be the Cosmere, which I've talked so many times about this year.
Yeah, I'm surprised that's only number three.
Yeah, because different worlds, different rules on each world, and yeah, it's great. Yep. Anyways.
My number three is The Matrix. I liked the...
That's good.
The first movie, the other two movies, the second one was fine, the third one, not so much. But the world itself is very interesting, and I find my brain kind of meandering into that world a lot, just thinking through little weird details.
I never understood the dislike of the latter two. Like, I get that maybe it's not as good as the first one, but like, to me it was like the first one's great and then the other two are not as good as the first one, but they're still like really fun to watch.
Yeah, for me it kind of slowly declined in entertainment, and the third one, like, I had real no desire to watch again afterwards. It's not like I hated it.
No.
But the second one I like watching, and the first one I really like watching. So yeah, that's all right. What's your number two?
My number two is the Dune universe, D-U-N-E, which is Frank Herbert's thing, which is...
You've tried to make me watch a couple different versions of it and a documentary. Yeah.
So, hello from the future. If you are listening to this after the Dune movie has come out and it's amazing and successful and the world is fully realized, then you'll understand this and know that this is correct.
Yeah. Anyways. All right. My number two is not necessarily a series I have that strong of an affinity for, but... The Harry Potter universe.
Yeah, I feel like, that's a good one.
It's very well, like, I don't want to say realized as in it's like fully fleshed out, but more kind of like what I like about all these is that it's a really interesting premise that lets your mind sort of just think about the possibilities outside of that.
Right.
Which I really like.
Yeah. And my verse one is, again, cliche, but I think it makes the most sense is the Lord of the Rings. Because... Not that world building wasn't done before Tolkien, but as far as like fantasy and sci-fi goes, like I feel like that was sort of like the standard. Like even Dune, which is what I mentioned previously, one of the blurbs, famous blurbs on that book was this is the science fiction Lord of the Rings. And so like so like even great world building exercises like that, like hark back to Lord of the Rings. Because it was just sort of like going from The Hobbit to him and up, at least understands like how much depth he put into thinking through this like fictional history, like all the way back to its mythical creation.
Right.
Like it's very good and like kind of the standard for world building.
Yeah, I had that in my runner ups, but like personally, that like theme isn't quite as interesting.
Yeah.
So it didn't end up in there. And kind of similar to what I was talking about with Harry Potter and then what my first one ended up being is like I tend to like the ones that are more open-ended, and that one is like fully defined, which is a feat and very impressive and cool.
True.
But it's
true.
A different thing.
I guess I'm looking at it like how well did he do it? So
exactly,
like,
right.
And in Lord of the Rings, like you get a sense of like I don't even remember how I knew it, but like you just get a sense really quick, like, oh, elves and dwarves don't get along for some reason and look down upon, but they're not necessarily considered bad people in the same way that an elf might treat a dwarf. Like just the fact that
I think so much of fantasy, like tropes, not in the bad way, but like fantasy standards that we just kind of take for granted. He did so much legwork for. Because even if you start a new series that's in that world, it's like what they need to define is the things that are different than the baseline.
Gotcha.
They don't necessarily have to define everything else. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Are you saying like there was a lot of groundwork prior to Lord of the Rings or since?
No. I'm saying Tolkien did so much legwork for like standard fantasy.
Right. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
That like now if you're going to talk about orcs, if you don't explain yourself, we have a baseline for that.
He also,
And then if you want it to be different, you can explain why it's different. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I completely agree with that. But sorry, go ahead. Do your number one.
My number one is Star Wars.
That's good.
I think that comes to no surprise.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. And that makes sense. You were saying the open-endedness of it. And I agree. That's like a huge, like I was just saying, that's what I like about like a lot of sci-fi and fantasy to begin with is just that and I feel that way with both Star Trek and Star Wars right now. They seem to be in these like moments in both of their franchises where they're completely open to possibilities, which is so much fun. Like anything could happen at this point.
All right. So we need to wrap this up. So let's go ahead and let you pick one more because you said you had one more that you wanted to talk about. Does that seem okay?
Yeah. Did you want to do toys growing up?
Yeah, that works for me.
Okay. I'll let you go first.
Okay, so my number three, I actually had quite a bit the more I thought about it. My number three was the recorder from Home Alone.
Oh, okay.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
I don't know what the actual recorder was called.
Something tiger in the name?
Let me actually...
Talk back.
Recorder from Home Alone. Was it Home Alone 2?
Yeah.
It was the Talk Boy.
Oh, okay.
And so I have no idea how I ended up with this. I believe it was one of my cousins and they left it at my house or something. But me and my sisters on like, especially like we did this at home too, but especially on like trips when we were in the car, we would spend hours recording ourselves doing like news broadcasts and shows and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And like you could record it, and when you were recording, you could record in slow motion.
Oh yeah.
Or in fast speed, so that when you played it back at normal speed, it sounded the inverse, either slow or fast.
Yeah.
And then I think you could play it in slow or fast too. So like you could do like I guess four or five different sort of types of voices just by changing the speed that it played. And then you did your own voices on top of that. And oh man, like I think we had one cassette that we just recorded over every time we did this.
We didn't.
But I spent so much time playing with that.
I'm not sure if my brother had one of those specifically at one point, but I remember he had something recording a recorder at some point. And yeah, like we always got a blast out of like slowing it down. And
yeah.
Yeah. Like what stupid thing could you say that slowed down?
It was like a little tool that let you like opened up a whole big world of like creativity.
Yeah. Yeah.
That I just love. Oh, it's manufactured by Tiger Electronics.
That's why.
Yeah.
That's right. Talk Boy by Tiger.
And obviously I called it Home Alone because it was in Home Alone 2. I don't remember even what he used it for, but.
So the only way I could cut down my list is by keeping it toys. So like I didn't do any game consoles or anything like that.
Oh yeah, I didn't either.
But my third one is a specific toy, but also just sort of these toys in general. I had whenever I was 11 was whenever Lord of the Rings came out.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I got some of the toys and I was into those toys for a couple of years and they were like really, that was when like toys started getting like really well designed. Like, aside from your Star Wars toys, which were always cool.
You're talking, like, action figures.
Yeah. And they were, like, really, like, I think the 10-inch figures. And they were, like, really well-designed and stuff. And I got a Ringwraith with a horse. And, like, I remember, like, I, like, took that thing with me everywhere for about a year until I turned 12. And then, you know, you're getting into middle school and then you're too old for that stuff.
Then it's embarrassing.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I had a Ringwraith with a horse and it was like so cool. And that's also just sort of Lord of the Rings toys in general. I had a bunch of.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was my number three.
I don't think I really got into the action figure thing. I don't remember really having any.
I was. So yeah, that was my number three.
All right. My number two is got to be Lego.
Oh, okay. That's good.
Lego are amazing. And
they are. I was never into Lego, though. Like, I had a cousin that got Lego stuff growing up, and it was always really cool. But
I should say I should bundle that really with, like, building toys. So, like, I really liked Kinects, too.
I did Bionicles for a while.
Those were, like, Lego-branded things.
Yeah, yeah, they weren't necessarily Legos. I was just thinking more like building stuff. Like,
right. I really liked... Honestly, I'm the weirdo kid that, like, I liked building the actual thing that you're supposed to build.
Oh, yeah.
And then playing with them and, like, taking them apart and doing stuff with them. But then before I put them away, I had to re-put them back together in their correct form.
Oh, yeah.
I wasn't, like, my cousin was one where he'd build the thing and then tear it apart and throw all the pieces in a bin. And so when we were at his house, you could just build whatever you want and you have all these pieces.
Yeah.
But I was weird. I liked having my toys in, or my Lego sets, like, in their correct, you know, the way that they're intended to be put together.
Yeah. Yeah, that was that Hello Internet that they were talking about? Like, they did that? Like, they just kind of put it all in a bin? It's like, oh, you just get all these pieces.
I don't know. I know that's what, like, a lot of people do.
Yeah.
It seems to be... I'm curious what listeners think, like, or what they did. I feel like there's an even split between people I know.
My cousin did not do that. He built the thing and no one was allowed to touch it, which sort of seemed counterintuitive to me. But
nobody was allowed to touch it. I played with them.
So for me, the action figures were more practical than Legos because I get the building aspect of it being fun. But when you're actually playing with it, you have to be so careful. Like, if you're running around with a Star Destroyer Lego thing, that can get damaged real quick. Whereas got the Star Destroyer action figure set, you know, you crash it, throw it across the room and poke a hole in the wall. I just always felt like that's probably
something tells me that we probably treated our toys slightly differently.
Probably. And our Star Wars CDs.
Star Wars CDs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't forget.
Anyways. So
all right, what's your number two?
My number two is I had Jango Fett's from the prequels Slave One ship.
Ooh,
which is the traditional Boba Fett ship from back in the day, but remade
blue
and redesigned with a lot more detail for the prequels series.
Right.
And I had that thing and that was amazing. It like shot rockets and everything.
Yeah. I knew somebody who had, I don't think they had that one. I think they had the Boba Fett one from the older ones.
Yeah. The original,
like the paint color. My memory of it is that it was the like green and blue or whatever those colors were.
Yeah.
But yeah, that one was pretty sweet.
Yeah. The new one even had the sound charges that dropped out the back. They were like, obviously they didn't make
that's
sound.
That's my like favorite sound design in all of Star Wars.
If I remember correctly, there was an electronic sound that would happen whenever you dropped the little red balls out.
That's
but
fantastic.
It wouldn't do anything else action wise. But yeah, so that was really cool. And I also wanted to use that to obviously just say Star Wars action figures in general. I had so many of them from the prequels, from the old ones and all that. So yeah, Star Wars toys were great.
Nice.
What's your number one?
My number one, you might make fun of me for it, but it is a set of toys that I probably spent the most time playing with. And that would be Beanie Babies.
Really? You strike me as the type of person that collected Beanie Babies.
Okay. So let me explain a little thing here. So we were not collectors of Beanie Babies. Our Beanie Babies were for playing with.
Ah.
Okay. So I think the big thing here is it made a really easy gift for like extended family, specifically my grandma, who until maybe 3 or 4 years ago was still giving all of us a Beanie Baby every Christmas.
Yeah.
And I think the thing was, like, you could collect all of these different sort of stuffed animals, basically, that were all a similar size. And we had a drawer, or drawers, I think, that were in my closet filled with them. And my sisters also did. And me and my sisters would, like, build elaborate, like, I mean, what you would do with action figures, I guess.
Yeah.
Elaborate, like, towns in, you know, we'd pick a room.
You'd set them up fighting each other?
I mean, maybe. I don't know. My sisters probably remember better than me, but I'm sure I did that annoyingly, maybe. I don't remember. Mostly what I remember is, like, you'd have a, like, bank, and you'd have a grocery store, and you'd have a blah, blah, blah. And, like, I don't really remember the action part as much as the setting it up. Like, it was literally like we were constructing a world inside of a room. And I remember taking them, like, when we'd stay at, like, my grandma's house when my parents were traveling or something. We'd stay there over a weekend.
Yep.
I remember we got to take, like, some amount of them with us. And we would build a world in my grandparents' like basement or in one of their rooms or something. It was this thing that I don't really know anybody else who played with Beanie Babies the way that we did.
Yeah.
I thought it was normal when we did it, but it is like this really strong memory I have of playing with my sisters is like building these giant worlds with all of these Beanie Babies we had.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. As long as it's not for collecting.
Right. Well, the other cool thing that came out of it is I still had them whenever I got married.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, literally, it's like it was like a couple of drawers of one of those, you know, those little like plastic bin kind of deal things. It's like drawers full of them. And my wife was teaching early childhood at the time. And so she's like, oh, can I just like take those for our play area?
Yeah.
And so she has a huge set that she would pull out, I think, like a certain amount every week or something. Like they would change up, and they basically played with them the same way that we did. They would like build, you know, they'd have a dentist office for a week or something like that. And so that makes me really happy to think that all these like Beanie Babies that we had for forever and we played with are now like being played with by kids too in kind of a similar way.
See, we didn't have that because, and I'm not making fun of you here, I'm just saying like it was just different because we were
cool.
No. We were three brothers and one sister.
Ah, yes.
And we had dogs. We've always kind of had dogs. And my little sister had so many Barbies. And every now and again, a dog would get a hold of one because they're like, you know, rubber.
Oh, yeah.
And so they like dogs like chewing on them. So she would always have about 10 Barbies, and at least one or two of them had bite marks. And whenever one got too gnarled up, we would always take them and blow them up or do something crazy with them. You know, kind of like Sid from Toy Story.
Yes, except, yes. Yeah, you guys were Sid from Toy Story.
Yes, exactly. And so, it was that was more the stuff that we did.
I had friends that were, like one of my friends growing up that lived down the street, it was him and then he had a younger brother. And that was where we blew up like McDonald's toys and stuff. That was definitely the vibe. And he had more action figures. That's where I played with a lot of action figures and stuff too. So I can totally understand the difference maybe in sort of the makeup of the family.
Well, my number one toy that I remember, and it's interesting because it's the earliest toy that I like remember getting for Christmas that was like a big deal. And like I remember it was before my little brother and sister were born. Probably before my mom even remarried, and like we were in my grandma's old trailer. It was Christmas. I was probably four, something like that, three or four. And I was really into dinosaurs. And that was around the time Jurassic Park was out.
I was so into dinosaurs, like obsessed with them.
They got me that big T-Rex toy. And it was back whenever they did some sketchy stuff with the toys. So
what does that mean?
This particular T-Rex, I'll explain. So it was a big toy. It was like, probably half my size at the time, being only four or five. And it came with the toilet guy, you know, who was sitting in the toilet.
Oh, man.
You could put him in the T-Rex's mouth and he would, and there was a little slit in the stomach that you could pull him out so he could eat the action figures.
Oh, I thought you meant in the stomach of the toilet guy.
No.
I was like,
no.
So I was expecting you to say like, and then you could like, they came with blood packs. And
yeah, he came with the toilet guy that got eaten in the first movie.
Oh my gosh.
So you could stuff him down his throat and then pull him out of the stomach for reuse.
Yeah, that does seem a bit extreme.
Yeah, so I remember I had that for a while and I would stuff Star Wars toys down there. So Darth Maul got eaten at one point by the T-Rex.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was cool. And like, you know, of course, had a button where he roared and all that stuff. But that was one of the coolest toys I remember from childhood. And I also had a lot of Jurassic Park toys as well.
I was obsessed with dinosaurs, but I don't remember having a lot of Jurassic Park specific stuff. Because I don't think I watched it until I was a little older. Because we were like four, I think, when it came out. And so I was crazy obsessed with dinosaurs, probably because everybody was obsessed with dinosaurs because of that movie. But
yeah,
it was dinosaurs in the scientific sense more than dinosaurs from that movie. Not until later did I come to love that movie.
Yeah. Yeah, we watched it since we were little. Like, probably, like, my grandma had a VHS copy, like, probably, yeah, so I was probably five then.
Yeah.
Somewhere around there, five or six.
So I had I have a couple I'll just run through really quick of my honorable mentions. The Yak Back. Do you remember that thing?
Oh, yeah.
Which is kind of in the similar vein as the recorder from Home Alone.
Right.
Transformers. I had a lot of Transformers. Or they were mostly Beast Wars.
I wanted to get into those, but they got kind of pricey.
Well, a lot of them were like McDonald's Transformers.
Yeah, that's true.
There's quite a wide variety of them, actually, I think. But
yeah, I had a lot of Batman toys for some reason. I went through a big Batman period in the 90s, and I had like all kinds of them. Like, I had like a Knight Batman that was on a horse. I had like a Samurai Batman, because, you know, toy companies came with all kinds of crazy crap. Yeah. So I had all kinds of Batmans and Power Rangers.
And then the other two things I have are, I had a like electronics kit that like, it was like a circuit board thing, and you could put a battery in there and like light up light bulbs and run wires and stuff. I loved that. And then I had like a magnet set that was kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
And I can still like see exactly what the box looks like, because it was always in my closet, and sometimes I would just pull them out and like play around with them.
Yeah. And obviously Pokemon cards were big at a time at some point in there for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. I got a lot of those at like my birthday and stuff from friends. So I had quite a few.
I remember both our first PlayStation and our first Xbox were like big deals when we got those.
Yeah. I wasn't thinking consoles, but yeah, the
Super Nintendo,
Super NES would probably be my favorite.
Yeah. We had that too. That was great.
Okay, so we need to wrap this up, because this is crazy how long this just went.
Right.
And yet, I don't feel like it's been that long like I normally do. I think it's just because this has actually been kind of fun to do.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. We just weren't going to get through all those lists, and we didn't. So
We didn't go as fast as I was kind of maybe hoping we would.
Yeah.
But hopefully it's entertaining, you know? That's the goal here.
Yeah, I think so.
It was fun for me anyway.
Yeah.
All right, do you want to do your favorite three lists from our lists?
Sure.
Yes. Yes, we're going to do that.
Okay.
This is the listicle of listicles.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, yeah, what is your number three?
My number three would be... I would say my number three was the Twitter follows. Okay. Because I think I got some from you that I didn't already know.
Yeah.
Maybe. Now I'm not remembering.
My number three is top movies of 2017.
Okay.
Simply because I'm an entertainment person, and I find that really interesting when other people talk about it for some reason.
There you go. What was your number two?
Movies. Top TV shows.
Okay. Yeah. Sure.
Same reason.
Yeah. Boring. Mine would be the conspiracy theories. That was fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did like that one.
That was good.
My top number one is the discussion that we just finished off on with toys.
Yeah, that's my number one too.
Yeah, because that was fun thinking about like whenever I had to make the list and like cutting out certain ones that I had forgotten about. And
yeah, me and my wife, because we were finishing this up right after we put the kids down, and we were both like scrolling through all the toys that like we grew up with, and she'd just be like, "Oh, Furbies, you remember those?
Oh yeah."
It's good.
Digimons, Furbies,
yeah,
Elmo.
Tamagotchis.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a big list.
Yeah. All kinds of stuff. Crazy.
All right, there you go.
Yeah.
So we had our listicles on listicles with listicles.
If there's any list that you guys like and you want to leave us a list, go ahead.
Yeah, list your favorite of our lists.
Yeah, yeah.
How about that? List.
Yeah. Or if there's any other lists you'd like... No, don't do that. We don't want to hear any more. We don't want to do any more lists. We're listed out.
Yeah, I'm pretty listed out. Hopefully, I've tapped Dan out on all the listing, and he's not going to ask me to list anything.
Until next year.
For at least a little while.
Right.
Yeah, this is going to become like our yearly thing.
Yeah.
Great. I mean, it was fun.
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
Yeah.
It was fun for me. I don't know if anybody else will like listening to him, but we'll see.
And I apologize for my voice. It should be better by next week, unless there's something horribly wrong with me.
Yeah, better be.
Something horribly wrong with me.
If your voice is still bad, there better be something horribly wrong with you.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks.
I don't know where I'm going.
All right. So if anybody, if you want to follow us, or if you're first time listening to us or whatever, you can follow us. You can find us at A-Town FM on pretty much any social media platform.
Yep. A-TownFM.com, at A-Town FM. A-Town FM, I don't know how you distinguish
your person
on Facebook.
Yeah,
we got a Reddit. We got a Reddit. /r/A-Town FM.
You can literally put in the at. You can literally put in the at sign in the search bar, A-Town FM on Facebook, and our page will show up.
There you go.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
All one word, no slash.
You can also just type on A-TownFM.com or A-Town FM and no at sign and still find us.
That's true.
Anyways, so yeah, just giving you all the options.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry for those of you that are still here.
Yeah.
I don't know why we're still going.
All right. Can we please be done now? My dog needs to go out. I can't talk anymore.
Well, this is so much fun, Dan. Don't you want to keep going?
All right. I'm hitting stop. Hey, I'm going to blow my nose real quick. Hold on.
Yep.
That's going to be our intro.
Yes.
I got a 3-pack of the lotion ones.
Ooh. How does that feel on your nose?
It smells like you're like breathing in Vaseline.
That's lovely.
Yeah.